This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So let's clarify here. Right now, if we're just looking at time dilation, it may take you a day to get to another star system, or a week, whatever. But back on Earth, it's 4.2 years, it's 5 years, it's 50 years, it's 100 years. By the time you get back, if you get back, all your relatives are gone. On the other hand, if the universe is expanding at a rate faster than the speed of light, maybe there's a way to travel from here to there where perceptibly on Earth, it's still a short period of time, and perceptibly on your spaceship, it's a short period of time. So you get back in a week, not 5 years later.
That's right. Special relativity is sort of the extension of Newtonian dynamics. So when you take Newton's theories, a reaction propulsion like a rocket, and you accelerate closer to the speed of light, you acquire all of that energy and all that momentum, it changes your relationship to space and time. But we're talking about general relativity. That's the law that governs the macroscopic motion of the cosmos and all that kind of stuff, right? So that physics doesn't have any kind of an upper speed limit. It looks theoretically like we're going to be able to find a way to travel to the nearest star system in a day or a week, and then come back in a day or a week, and a day or a week will have passed on Earth.
Well, right. Now we're getting way past where my last look into any of this is obviously, I mean, and because last time I checked into general relativity, there was an assumption that the speed of light was still the constant. And without it, you don't get general relativity. So I'm not really sure how we can say that there's no, you know, it's not okay. Applied, or that the speed limit doesn't apply. And it was also talked about mass, and it still says that the closer you get to the speed of light, the more mass you acquire. Now, okay, so it doesn't really matter how you do it, whether it's with this kind of anti-gravity propulsion or some sort of reaction propulsion, you're still having to deal with that factor. I was just looking at it this afternoon, so unless that's changed this
afternoon. I can clear this up. It's because you can be right about one thing and wrong about another. Yeah. So the speed of light is absolutely, it holds for this, for general relativity. Even gravitational waves move at the speed of light. This is a cosmic constant. But light is moving through space-time, right? So when you're talking about gravitational field propulsion, you're not moving through space-time. You're moving the space-time, basically distorting the space-time so that you change position. You're actually stationary with respect to your own reference frame. So those laws where you approach the speed of light and all that, they don't apply because you're not actually accelerating through space-time. You're not moving like light.
It sounds like it just sort of jumped over the part, though, where mass is involved, and it's an intrinsic part of general relativity as well. And in order to warp space-time, you have to have the presence of mass, and mass increases with velocity, and therefore the energy requirements are still large, regardless of what kind of propulsion system you're using. It seems to me that this shortcut is maybe just a little bit too much of a shortcut. I mean, but I'm not the expert here.
Well, I don't think anybody's really an expert in this stuff because nobody's really engineered this general relativity yet, and we're still figuring out what's theoretically possible. But like we look at with Robert Forward's work on negative matter propulsion, if you have an equal magnitude of positive and negative mass, then the net mass of your system is zero, and yet you're accelerating. So we see with dark energy that we have an anti-gravitational field that permeates the entire universe. Now, our current model is that this is an intrinsic property of space-time that nobody can explain properly and leads to the cosmological constant catastrophe.
Dark matter, dark energy. I mean, there's people that say, okay, it's stuff. And then there's people that just go, well, we don't know that it's stuff. And there's people that say, well, maybe actually the laws of physics do change in different parts of the universe. And then there's people that just say, well, I don't know. We don't know what it is, but we're going to put these numbers down and use them because that seems to be what fits.
Important distinction to make is that we're not saying, was that we know that the effects are real. These are measurable, these are observable empirical realities. The causes we don't understand yet. So we don't know what dark energy is, we don't know what dark matter is, but we do know that their effects are very real. So we know that there's an anti-gravitational field permeating the universe right now that's accelerating galaxy clusters apart faster and faster and faster. So these effects are real, and how to produce them is the remaining question. So since we don't know what the real cause of these effects are, it's quite possible that dark energy is an effect that's produced by causes which we can manipulate in a lab. So if that's true, then we can produce that other polarity of gravitational field. The negative gravitational field is all throughout the cosmos right now in a concentrated form and open the doorway, perhaps, to these kind of interstellar capabilities.
Now, weren't you doing some, set up these experiments yourself? You were an artist with the studio, and you're pretty good at putting stuff together. I seem to recall on the forums when we were talking about this, you were actually trying to do a real life experiment along these lines.
Yes, this is where we get into, yes, I'm kind of a madman. I'm a leading artist, New Orleans Carnival. I love making art. I love bringing beautiful, inspirational art to people on the streets. It's a great way to make a living. I get to basically dream up things that I would love to make and people pay me to make them. And that also affords me a precious opportunity to pursue my research and my studies and to do things like the Physics Frontiers podcast, which we've done like 60 episodes now, where myself and Dr. Jim Ranchler, a professor of physics at Texas A&M, we talk about the most interesting theoretical physics papers out there, and we do podcasts about them so that people can sort of keep up with that stuff. So one of the things that I started to do a few years ago was I had studied Boyd Bushman. Now, you guys did an interview back in, 2007, I think it might have been, way back. And you had a tiger by the tail, and I don't think that at the time you really knew it, because he was kind of a nutty character, and he was fun and whimsical, and he wasn't always right about things, but he was a brilliant man. I was so fascinated with that interview that I think it was November 4th, 2007, that I started researching Boyd Bushman. I started looking up his patents. I read his patents. I got a hold of every interview and podcast that I could find. He has at least, 17 or 18 really excellent patents. You can look them up on Google Patents. They were funded and sponsored by Lockheed. He was a research scientist at Skunk Works. He was one of the few scientists in history to actually come out in public and talk about this kind of stuff. So one of the things that he taught, and he lost his security clearance, by the way, for talking to Nick Cook in the Billion Dollar Secret video, and he sued Lockheed over that because he was improperly prepared by the security personnel at Lockheed, and apparently he stepped on some kind of subject in that interview, or maybe it hit the cutting room floor, I don't know, but it lost him his security clearance, which basically ended his career as a secret military research scientist who was a brilliant breakthrough scientist. One of the amazing patents that he has, which I just love because it could have been discovered 100 years earlier, he realized that you could, that, okay, you know how a magnetic field has a north and a south pole? Okay. So he realized that if you had a magnet, like a north pole on one side of a magnet, and if you arranged at a 90-degree angle a series of north-facing magnets towards that pole, that you could extend the magnetic field outward like a kind of a beam. And he experimented with that Lockheed, and he found that you could create incredibly disruptive weapons. You could create an artificial EMP pulse this way. And one of the things, the applications that he had for this was a type of field propulsion that we might want to talk about briefly. But he talked about in, I think it was Andromeda, From Here to Andromeda, that he talked about an experiment that he did at Lockheed where he put a pair of magnets together, very powerful magnets together, very lightweight, but very powerful, inside of an indistinctive mass, some kind of blob. And then he had another blob which weighed the same amount of weight. And then he dropped them simultaneously from a height of about 50 feet inside of an atrium at Lockheed. And he had people witness down below, like which one hit first or did they hit at the same time. And in each case, the witnesses reported that the mass containing the magnets, which they were unaware of, hit the ground a little bit later than the ordinary mass.
We're going to break now with Thomas Morrison. And Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Deb's constipation with belly pain, discomfort, and bloating kept giving her grief. She talked to her doctor to get some relief. Turns out Deb had irritable bowel syndrome with constipation, or IBS-C, which was a start. Saying yes to Linzess helped her do her part.
Linzess, or linaclotide, is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. Linzess works differently than laxatives. It lets you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually. Do not give Linzess to children less than 6, and it should not be given to children 6 to less than 18. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling. There could be more to your story with IBS-C. Talk to a doctor today. Say yes to Linzess. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS. Sponsored by AbbVie and Ironwood Pharmaceuticals.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MacTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you, too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
In case you folks are wondering just what we're talking about here, on November 4th, 2007, with our original co-host, Boyd Bushman, was a guest on the Paracast, a two-hour show, and all I can say is, if you want to get more of a sense of what that guy's about, listen to the episode. Thomas, go ahead, please.
So Boyd Bushman described this experiment in the film From Here to Andromeda. He even holds up a little certificate that he submitted to Lockheed where the witnesses have signed off on this finding, that the mask, which had a hidden pair of magnets forced together against their repulsive nature, that they hit the ground a little bit later than the ordinary mass. Okay, so that is an incredibly primitive proof of principle concept and not something that is really scientific because you don't have any hard numbers or anything. So what I did a few years ago is I built a system which had an automated release with a remote control that would start a pair of calibrated digital timers at a catch box below that has a pair of laser beams with an optical trigger, so that when you drop these masses from a height like 50 feet or above, then you would start the timers and you would actually be able to quantify if one of these masses hit the ground or hit the sandbox underneath the laser beams sooner or later or at the same time, right? So I built this whole thing. I happened to live on the top floor of the St. Vincent Guest House on Magazine Street in New Orleans at the time, which was about 55 feet off the ground. But the problem was that the masses were so light that any amount of wind blew them off of their target trajectory and they would crash in next to my laser triggered measuring apparatus. It drove me crazy. I waited for days for the wind to get so low that it wouldn't do this, but even the slightest breeze was enough to move these masses off of their trajectory, falling straight down. And then when I realized that it was hopeless and I really needed an atrium like he had used at Lockheed, the freaking pandemic hit, and the only atrium that I knew of was unavailable to me. It's been a little while. I'm going to have to do a little tuning in order to get that experiment up and running again, but I will run it, and I will let you know what the results are. I'm intrigued by it. I think Boyd Bushman was a fascinating character, and I think he may have given us a key, the first technological interaction with gravitational fields that we've ever seen. So if he did, then that will be a huge step forward, I think, for theoretical physics.
Just to let people know that Boyd Bushman died in 2014.
That's right. And one of the things I want to talk about real quickly is his deathbed confession video. If you listen to that Paracast episode, you will hear him describe the story of Bob Lazar. Now, we all have dark feelings, I think, about the hoax that is the Bob Lazar story. But Boyd had looked into it, and he was fascinated by it. And what he thought that he had found there was a story and a cover story. Okay, so he thinks that it was like an effort of research scientists who were compartmentalized within the military research community, that they wanted to get information out that some stable isotopes of element 115 were interesting and may have military applications. They couldn't do this directly because the compartmentalization makes it illegal for these different research teams to talk to each other about their findings. So he said that what happens is the security personnel will create a cover story, say, about aliens and UFOs inside a secret military base in order to get the story out disseminated widely for free in the press. And then buried within that story, the cover story, is the actual story, the payload of information that they want to deliver. You don't need to believe that this is true, even. All you need to know is that Boyd Bushman believed it, and he talked about it, not only on your podcast, but in some other podcasts and interviews. So his deathbed confession video is a replica of that story, that entire concept. So he created the exact same thing. He told a fake story using plastic like aliens photographed through the Polaroid or whatever, about if UFOs traveling to other star systems and photos of other stars. All of that was bogus. This is all the cover story. And so most people would write it off. It's like, oh, some crazy guy talking some totally bogus story about aliens and UFOs and government and all that stuff. So they would just write the whole thing off. But buried within that same video, he shows us some of these crystalline spheres, and he shows you how he's reading voltage off of these crystalline spheres. And at one point, I think it was in a different interview, he talks about how they were able to alter the frequency of the energy coming off of these spheres to power his entire research lab at Lockheed for months on end, and they never ran out of juice.
So these spheres came from the planet Krypton.
We have no idea where these came from, and it may have nothing to do with aliens at all, and probably doesn't. But
the reason I mention that is because in the Superman comic books, they use a crystalline kind of power source.
Okay.
As they do on Star Trek, and even on Stargate, they have the ZBM modules with,
right.
And they seem to have some kind of crystal in there too. Crystals are a big part of this whole thing. Crystals have been a part of the whole supernatural, paranormal, UFO thing all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah, the crystals are very interesting because you're talking about a structure which has a very efficient internal resonance capability. So if there's any kind of vibration in the environment, then the crystals will pick that up and make it resonate with that frequency, right? So let's say, for example, that there really is a zero-point energy and that there's a little jitter to matter. And let's say that you could organize the atoms in a piece of crystal so that they would vibrate at a frequency which tunes in to this stochastic energy and manages to convert some of it into usable electrical impulses, then you would have an inexhaustible source of free energy for all intents and purposes, right? Or perhaps it's converting thermal energy, just the vibrations all around us now in the form of heat into electrical energy through a mechanism that we don't understand yet. In any case, what really intrigued me about this was it seemed like, oh, that might be just a totally harebrained claim or whatever. Somebody left a comment on, what's her name, Sharon Hill, I doubt it,
right.
Skeptic site.
Sure.
Somebody left a comment on the story that she wrote about his deathbed confession video. And the person writing the comment, they used the handle Uncle Boyd Was Fun. And they said that they had known Boyd Bushman because they were friends with his kids, and he was this like lovable kind of zany old man that made these wild claims, and they talk about how he created like a bed of pins in this sheet, and he said that he could convert heat into electricity using this concept, and it was, of course they said that was impossible, so that can't be done. Well, he's actually got a patent about that concept in the Google patents. You can look it up. Lockheed sponsored it. They did research on this, and they have experimental findings inside the patent. So it appears that it was a successful patent. Then they said that he had these marble that he called the magical marbles that he would keep in his pocket. He said that they would always maintain the same temperature even in different weather conditions, and that they were somehow intelligent, like he didn't understand them. Well, they, of course, the person writing the comment didn't believe this either, but it's another indication that somebody actually saw these little crystalline spheres, had no idea what they were, and Boyd Bushman was fascinated with them, and they appeared to be generating energy. So we have independent confirmation accidentally from somebody who didn't believe any of Boyd's stories that these things actually existed.
Hey, we're going to break with Thomas Morrison. Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
COVID vaccinations in the U.S. have picked up in the wake of the rise of new cases fueled by the spread of the Delta variant. The White House says more than 3 million people received their first dose of vaccine in the last week. White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain tweeting Saturday that more adults have received their first dose than at any time in the last 2 months, and that large increases are being seen in states with large numbers of Delta cases. Nearly 70% of American adults have now received at least one dose. and the first flight evacuating Afghans who worked with U.S. forces has landed in the United States. The flight carrying more than 200 people landed outside of Washington, D.C. late Friday night as part of a program to get those who assisted American troops out of the country as U.S. forces are being pulled out. In a statement, President Biden welcomed them to the country and thanked them for standing with the United States. This is USA Radio News. A strange sight spotted once again in the sky above Los Angeles. Here's Mike Fortier.
A cargo pilot calls air traffic control at LAX after seeing something unusual to his right. Jetpack man. Apparently a man in a jetpack flying about 5,000 feet in the air a little after 6 o'clock Wednesday night. Unusual but not unprecedented. Pilots reporting sightings of jetpack man twice last year in the same area. Federal investigators haven't been able to get to the bottom of the story. Is it really someone with a jetpack or just a drone made to look like someone in a jetpack? The FBI tells the New York Times it's investigating. From the USA Radio News Florida Bureau, I'm Mike Fortier.
And the U.S. continued their success in the Tokyo pool on Saturday. Caleb Dressel earned his fourth gold medal of the Games, winning the 50-meter freestyle and setting a new Olympic record in the process. Bobby Fink surged on the final lap of the 1,500-meter freestyle to grab another gold, the first for the U.S. in that event since 1984. This is USA Radio News.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
This is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So I would admit that when we had Boyd Bushman on the Paracast those many years ago, we kind of assumed he was somewhat of an eccentric, but maybe not so eccentric. Thomas?
He was both eccentric. He was also a little bit of kind of a wiseacre. One of the things that I learned when I was studying him online was that one of his daughters had a boyfriend or a prospective suitor come over one day, and Boyd very solemnly said, "Look, you know, let's go for a drive." And so he gets this teenage kid, high school kid, in his car. They start driving, and Boyd drives to the launch site for boats on a local lake, and drives right into the lake. And the kid is freaking out, but Boyd had made his car into an amphibious car. It had little motors that would push it across the water, and it was waterproof. So he took the kid on a drive over the surface of the lake and back again just to, you know, pull a prank on him and have some fun with this thing that he'd built. So Boyd was a very lovable, kind of zany character. He had some pretty wild ideas about stuff, but that's probably one of the reasons why he was such a genius and willing to, like, buck the system. Like, he was willing to ask questions, you know, impertinent questions, and that's really what great science is about. You have to have the courage to ask impertinent questions to see if you can find new answers, and it appears to me from his patent record that he did that successfully over and over again. It appears that he was involved in the development of the Red Eye, which is the first heat-seeking missile. Apparently, he was inspired by learning about how snakes were able to detect the presence of animals and people around them using, like, infrared cells in their olfactory system. And he was like, well, maybe we can do that technologically so that we can pick up the heat signature of an incoming missile or something, or some kind of object that we want to hit. And he developed, with his defense research teams, the technology for the heat-seeking missile. So, you know, this guy was brilliant. He's a little crazy. deeply lovable. I think he was a true patriot. And I think that it's kind of tragic that so many people misunderstand him because they think that the deathbed confession video was about aliens and UFOs when that was just him kind of having fun with it to get the story and to show people how easy it is to get a story disseminated all around the world and to put a payload of information in there that nobody's going to notice unless you're looking for it.
I really love your attitude when it comes to that. And I've said this before on the show, that I wouldn't be surprised if it's exactly someone like yourself or him or who knows, the stroke of genius guy that, you know, put together the windshield wipers with blenders and parts from, you know, that you'd buy at the store. Someone's going to figure it out in their garage. You know, like that's how it's going to happen. These big secret companies, they're going to be going, I don't know. And then somebody's going to come out with it and it's just going to blow everybody away and everyone will have it.
Zefram Cochrane is the inventor of warp drive.
I don't want to speak out of turn, but what I will say is that there are conceptual models within general relativity that most people haven't considered that I think we really do need to consider because those types of technologies may be closer within our reach than we realize. And one of the reasons why advancements in theoretical applied general relativity have been so slow is because we don't have a technology yet for applied general relativity. But that shouldn't slow us down because we know that general relativity works. And so I'll give you a little bit of rundown that will help everybody in the audience understand something that's incredibly important about general relativity. General relativity in the weak field limit, which is, you know, low accelerations like we're dealing with, say, on the surface of the Earth, it reduces down to basically the same equations as electrodynamics with one sign change. So if you normally we have, say, electromagnetism, you know that two negative charges will repel each other. And so that's an obvious effect. With general relativity, you can look at it and you can say that we have a mass charge that's like the Earth, and then we have another mass charge that's like your body, and they actually attract each other, just like an electrical field attracts each other, right? You can actually write out all of the Maxwell equations for charge interactions with that simple sign reversal and get all of the inductive phenomena that we see with electromagnetism. Look at what electromagnetism has given to us. Like, really, all of our important technology today is in some way directly tied to electromagnetism. Well, it turns out that you have all of the same kinds of capabilities with gravitational charge interactions that you have with electrical charge interactions. Except the interesting thing about general relativity is that now you're dealing with like motive forces. You're not talking about just electrons moving around. You're talking about bodies of matter that move around. You can induce rotations. You can induce linear motions. You can, with general relativity, you can slow the rate of time and probably increase the speed of the rate of time also. You can even engineer spaces that are larger or smaller on the inside than they are on the outside, based on your applied technology. So using these really simple inductive principles, you can do things with general relativity that most people haven't even considered. You know, we're still stuck in the Newtonian idea of gravity, right? We think a body of matter attracts another body of matter, and that's all there is to it. But no, the entire field of inductive phenomena applies to general relativity also. So there are technological capabilities there that we have not even dreamed of yet, and we need to look at those because there are applications that we haven't discovered yet that I think we can do in the near term with human technology. And it's probably going to have to happen through atomic-level ordering of materials, but it's going to be a really exciting time when we create the first gravitational field in a lab. I should mention that there's already a proposal on the table. We could do this. Like, it would be difficult. It would cost a few billion dollars. We spent that kind of money on the Large Hadron Collider. But we know how to produce an artificial gravitational field in the lab right now. The thing is that it's not that interesting, is that creating a really weak gravitational field in the lab doesn't really get us anything new. So nobody really wants to fund that experiment. But it's all based on general relativity. It's all within our reach. So we are now crossing the Rubicon. We're now in the reach of producing gravitational fields.
Okay. Yeah. This is like really awesome, but like I was saying, like we're going through so many things here. I'd like to just stop for a second.
Sure.
Where you said they are now producing artificial gravitational fields in a lab.
No, they can't. There's a proposal for this in the academic literature.
Oh, okay. So they haven't done it. Okay. I thought.
It would cost at least $1 billion. We'd have to make these really special, extremely powerful Helmholtz magnets in opposition and create, because we know that general relativity, in addition to matter isn't the only thing in current space, energy, and specifically, there's an electromagnetic stress energy tensor. So if you can create extremely intense electromagnetic fields, you can also create gravitational fields.
Okay, Like, this is all fascinating and awesome, but I'd just like to interject in here that I think they're absolutely on the right track, and that your thinking is on the right track, and that whoever is thinking about this at all is on the right track when they start talking magnets, superconductors, and electromagnetic fields instead of combustion reaction like you're talking about. This is the direction that we need to go. And it was a few years ago, well, quite a few years ago now, when I first saw a demonstration of the Meissner effect, right? The Meissner effect. Yes, and right. I thought, well, okay, so how do we know that when that magnet on the superconducting table there, how do we know that it actually weighs anything anymore when it's levitating? And everybody was, so I wrote to MIT in a couple of labs, and I said, you know, has anybody actually put that on a weigh scale to see what happens? Like, is there any loss? And they said it was a stupid idea because of all of the usual physics that are behind it. And I said, yeah, but you don't know unless you've tried it, right? This is kind of new. And I guess some Russians or something did try it, and they spun this magnet around, and apparently they did get some reduction in the gravitational attraction, according to them. Have you heard of this? Is there anything to it?
Before we continue, we're Thomas Morrison, student of physics, trying to look into the possibilities of anti-gravity propulsion, a system to take us to the stars. We'll have a lot more to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on our distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
We are GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. We've got listeners, lots of them. Around the world, around the clock, our listeners do what listeners do. They listen. And you know what listeners got? Needs. Needs for your products, your services, and money to buy those needs. With our network of over 1,000 radio stations, streaming on the web, and our satellite transmissions, we're reaching our listeners with quality conservative programming. But there's something our listeners don't have. Your offer to meet their needs. Any business needs buyers. But if our listeners don't hear your message, they're still going to buy what they need. Just not from your business. So let's fix this. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message for our GCN listeners. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email. advertise@GCNlive.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
$5,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So let's continue with that. Randall, you posed a question, Thomas.
Right.
We're trying to analyze what might happen, but maybe Thomas will set up his lab in his garage, and he will do it.
I guess I could do that. It wouldn't be a difficult experiment to run. I mean, it's done in high school physics labs all around the world.
Yeah,
the thing is that
when
is
I first saw this, you couldn't hardly do it yourself because it was just kind of complex to get all the stuff together. But now, like you're saying, it's all over the place. Like,
yeah,
you could do this. But you wouldn't have to worry about the draft.
Well, that's true. You do that in a nice, controlled environment. The thing is that I don't see any reason to expect there to be a mass reduction because it's just like if you put a magnet in opposition to another magnet. What happens with superconductive levitation, the Meissner effect, is that the magnetic field of the magnet gets repelled by the surface of the superconductor. And so basically it creates like a mirror. And so it repels itself off the surface of the superconductor. So it's kind of like having a magnet with the north pole facing upward and then putting a magnet on top of it, which has a north pole facing downward,
right,
just creating magnetic
back
repulsion. Right. So it's just magnetic suspension.
But I mean, it's just magnetic suspension. Yeah.
Well,
it's really kind of cool. And
it is cool.
Like these guys in Russia, I swear, I've read this article in more than one place, and it's been debunked here and there, and other people say, no, they've done it too. And then another person will say it's been debunked, and then another person will say, nope, they've done it too. Check it out, because who knows?
I want to see that paper. If you could send that to me, that'd be great. I'd love to read it.
And
the problem is, the Russians do tend to publish a lot of crazy stuff that turns out to be bunk.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yep.
But what the point is what I love about the stuff that you're doing here is you're the kind of guy that would go, well, let me check it out for myself. I could probably do that, you know.
Sure.
That's the kind of people we need doing this.
Yeah, it really does help to have sort of a, you know, independent kind of unwillingness to accept anything that's given to you as dogma.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really easy to talk about stuff and to go, oh, well, hey, what about this and what about that? But not everybody has, you know, studio and materials and a way to set it all up and the will to actually make it work.
There are some great experimentalists, though, out there. I mean, there is a kind of a cottage industry of experimental radicals out there. The Advanced Propulsion Engineering Conferences, I think, enlist a lot of research scientists along those lines who are willing to do those kind of experiments that would seem to defy everything that we know about quantum field theory and general general relativity, and they are constantly publishing YouTube videos, so you can check out their work. There's some interesting out-of-the-box thinking there. I'm a little bit more of a traditionalist, though. I've read so many thousands of academic science papers that I feel pretty confident in the models that we have so far to an extent. The only really big gap that we see right now in theoretical physics is the junction between quantum field theory and general relativity. That's a huge problem, because without a unified field theory that encompasses both of those theories, we've got the physics of quantum field theory, which is our engineering toolbox. It's how we build everything, from your computers to you name it, right? Every kind of electrical phenomenon, all that stuff falls into quantum field theory. And then you've got general relativity, which is all the really fun, cool stuff that we can't do yet, and we don't have really a good engineering toolbox for that. We kind of a little loss on how you can produce measurable effects with general relativity using that technology.
You're much more well-versed in this than I am, but I do believe that they're putting it to practical application when they're figuring out and doing the calculations for things like geosynchronous satellites and mapping satellites and cell phone relays. And because the way that math works out, they can increase the accuracy by like tenfold.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the time dilation effects between here and space are significant. They have a huge impact on the GPS system. They have to correct for that on a moment-by-moment basis. You know, we are using general relativity all over the place in order to predict and detect and measure and all that kind of stuff. So we know that general relativity is right to within the observational parameters of every experiment that we can do in the lab, on the Earth, that we can do astronomically. I guess there's some remaining questions about how it deals with dark energy and dark matter, but those are talking about galactic and intergalactic scales. So for all practical purposes, we know that it's right. So we just can't build anything that makes gravitational fields yet, or we have a proposal, but even that proposal would entail making an extremely weak gravitational field.
A lot of cost and a lot of time and effort.
Let me ask you a question here, though.
Yeah, go, Gene.
We're starting at a point of zero here in terms of this being a natural development of Earth scientists. We got all this stuff we're working on, and with the right combination of circumstances, Thomas Morrison in his garage or somebody will come up with a workable system that can power a craft into space, into the stars. And now we've got those UFOs, our inspiration. And now we've got a certain event back in 1947 where a UFO may have crashed near Roswell, New Mexico, where we may have recovered something. Is this something that you would believe in, Thomas? Or are we setting all that aside? Because if we have that technology, how long would it take us to figure it out?
Okay, these are good questions. I am an agnostic when it comes to Roswell, because that's just such a hairball, and there's some good arguments about why it didn't happen. So, yeah. But on the other hand, you know, Jesse Marcel's son made some really interesting statements that seemed to refute the idea that it was all the mobile balloon. So I'm not really sure what to make of it. But what is interesting is Dr. Eric Davis and Lou Elizondo seem to think that the U.S. or a corporation working closely with the DOD has possession of some kind of technology or material which was not of earthly origin. And I am absolutely fascinated by this, because empirical evidence of that nature is exactly what this field could really use. You know, it would be a game changer. And I know that Jacques Vallée and Dr. Gary Nolan have talked about some work that they're doing with the material, and they're writing a paper about it, and they're going to submit that for peer review and see if they can get it published. So I'm cautious but excited that we may see something in the academic literature about exactly that kind of material, and it might not be that far off. I think that what we could learn, you know, holy smokes, you know, that's a really difficult question, because, you know, there, on one hand, you've got the argument, you give an iPhone to Aristotle, and what's he going to do with it? You know, he doesn't even know how to measure an electrical current.
He'll call his mother. Understand. What do you think?
Well, there's no cell tower.
It didn't call me. They haven't called me in 6 months. Why haven't you have called me? I'll tell you the truth. You hadn't called me in 6 months. Why?
But on the other hand, we're not ancient Greeks. We have a huge technological infrastructure. We have the ability to detect effects at a quantum level with time scales that are incredibly tiny, attosecond imaging, all this kind of stuff. I think we could learn something. I think it would definitely help us move forward. I just don't know if a fragment of a material is going to help us understand the macroscopic application and how it works and how it's powered and all of that kind of stuff. So it really depends on what it is that we recover, if we can get some kind of effect out of it. You know, it would be the most fascinating puzzle in the world to try to understand a piece of technology, even a fragment of material that came from a non-terrestrial civilization. What we learn, it's impossible to say. It could be so far beyond us that we only make a few steps in a certain direction that may have, you know, I don't know. You'd want a full UFO. You know, you'd want to have one of these babies to run some tests on.
This really does bring us back to where we were at the beginning of the show, though, and we've got this sort of idea that, well, maybe it could be so far beyond as we could never figure it out, but yet you yourself were making the point that we're actually constructing matter out of its constituent parts now. I know that, you know, it seems like there could be things that are a lot more advanced than us, and there's probably no doubt that there are, and yet I don't think that anything is now beyond our capability to figure out if we were given, like you suggest, like a working model. Like, we could do it. We could definitely figure it out.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, even if we knew... Okay, so Jacques Vallée, one of the most fascinating statements that I've heard in recent years is Jacques Vallée talked about on an interview on... was watched on YouTube. I can't remember the specific one right now. It was just a few years ago. He was talking about a material that they were studying where they found that there was a specific element in that composition, and that specific element has five stable naturally occurring isotopes, right? And he said that in this material, they found only three of these isotopes. So if you mine this stuff, for example, anywhere on the Earth, say it's magnesium or whatever, you're going to find all of the isotopes in certain abundances in that material. And all of our technology basically boils, almost all of our technology, except for maybe nuclear technology, boils down to just purifying it so you use the element.
Thomas, let's do our break. We'll have more. Come with Gene Randall and Thomas. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code
George for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code George if you decide to connect with someone you like.